Okay, well, welcome to this week's...
Miyazaki!
Oh, I know, Miyazaki is so great. I mean, this latest film from Studio Ghibli, it's just awesome. The Pigs of the Skies and the Strong Girl.
Ghibli! Ghibli's just so smart with it. Like.
I know, it's just Miyazaki knows what he's doing when it comes to making fantastical Ghibli films. That's why around here we call it Studio Top Recommendation. You know, I mean, Studio Ghibli puts out the best films. I mean, every year Ghibli makes quality Ghibli films. And, you know, Disney releases three of the Ghibli movies at one time, so it's like a Ghiblization.
You know, we should just give, we should start giving the awards to people like Miyazaki, get, just automatically gets highly recommended
yeah,
in everything
like,
we do.
And we could call it the Miyazaki Award, you see. And we'll give it out for, you know, films of excellent caliber. It'll be the, we'll call it the Miyazaki Studio Ghibli Quality Award for Studio Ghibli Quality Films, like the ones Miyazaki does.
That would be Miyazaki-rific.
You know, I tell you, me and Zaki are like this big. It's just, you know, Studio Ghibli just makes the greatest films, you know.
How Miyazaki?
And each of them, even though they're all great, they're so individual. I mean, this one I watched, it had this recurring theme with flight in it. You know, wasn't that cool? I mean, seriously, you know. And then this other one has this strong girl that goes and, like, leads these people, you know, and encourages their spirits. And it's just incredible, really, what he does. You know, everyone is different.
They're so real, like, you could almost touch it.
So, such as, for example, Pigs in the Sky with the Strong Girl. That movie was really great because, I mean, here you are, all these pigs, right? And they're flying gliders in hand-to-hand combat. And it's just a great story because eventually they're all united by the princess of the pig kingdom. You know?
That's
and
true.
It's just awesome. What a great
and
job.
And it saves all the pirates from blowing up everybody.
Yeah, I know. And
going on a rampage and destroying the world.
Is these pirates, they have the bicycle bike that they ride, you know, and they're all old men, and they're so funny, you know. But, you know, Studio Ghibli has really done a great job with this latest Studio Ghibli film. And so what I'm going to give this is a top recommendation. That's where it's so recommended that out of the top recommended ones, it is the best of the top recommended ones. What are you going to be giving this one, Fanboy DB3?
I'll have to give this one a highly top recommendation.
Ooh, that's pretty high.
I don't think you can top this Ghibli Miyazaki film ever.
You know, this is the Ghibliest Miyazaki film that I have ever Miyazaki'd in my Ghibli. What about you, Z-Guy?
I think we should invent a new rating, the Ghibli recommendation.
Ah, yes. Or the Ghiblation.
Ah,
we'll call it,
there
eh?
We go.
The top Ghiblation. I think that really, do you think this particular Miyazaki movie made by Studio Ghibli deserves to get the top Ghiblation rating?
I do indeed.
That would be the perfect rating for this Ghiblation movie.
Okay, well, from Fanboy NV17,
DB3,
and Z-Guy,
we give this one a very enthusiastic and blind top Ghibli recommendation, highly recommended top recommendation.
Those clever engineers.
But yeah.
Time for ASO Radio.
Well, once again, it's that time, gentlemen. That's right, time to sing the Colgate song. Wait, no. We're not a troupe of 1950s jingle singers. Indeed, it is time for episode 71 of ASO Radio. This is, of course, MV17,
Z-Guy,
and DB3. And we're bringing you the best, greatest, and latest in the world of anime. At freaking 10 o'clock in the morning, this awake at this time, like crazy people.
Hey, but I'm always awake at this time.
Whoever likes the crazy people! And the exception of DB3. And by the way, did this so Z-Guy could be on the show, but next time we're going to make sure to watch the anime at night and then have him come over in the morning so that, well, we're not so tired. But we've got a great show for you this week. No real news. There was something about some manga that nobody cared about. But we did up all the news on Saturday, and we're recording the show on Tuesday. Remarkably little anime news happens at the beginning of the week right after you do it all on Saturday. So we're going to be skipping the anime news on this show and going right to the review. So here we go. It's not a new view, it's not a preview, it's a review. Anime review. Alright, well, continuing on our theme of reviewing all the SG films that were recently released. Of course, actually, gentlemen, if you notice the date, it's March 22nd, which is exactly 1 month to the day that the three were released. So, wow. Quite the coincidence, eh?
Yeah.
And it's also a Tuesday. That's pretty funny, because last one was a Tuesday as well. Anyways, what we've got now is we're going to be reviewing Porco Rosso, which was directed by M under SG. And, well, how about you guys go and recount the story for us? You guys are a little tired here, so we're going to have him recount it in an effort to make sure that he stays awake until it leaves the fan mail section.
Okay, don't worry. I'm going to stay awake. And I'm going to read you the story.
You got to go, buddy!
Oh! I'm tired of your lies.
All right.
You can't even remember. We just barely watched it.
Yeah, start from the beginning. That's a good point.
Okay, there's this guy. He's a...
A guy?
A pig. Well, he's a pig. I was about to get you that. And he goes on this great adventure.
Well, that's...
Keep your eyes into the point.
That's what usually happens in SG movies.
And on this great adventure, he shoots down a lot of planes because he pilots one himself. And it's a seaplane.
Why does he hate the other planes?
Die, you plane!
He's like envious. Why couldn't I have a cool plane?
And the reason why everybody else has a cool plane is because they're pirates.
Actually, he has the cool plane.
Yeah, he has the coolest plane. He's got some mad flying skills as well. That thing's falling apart at the beginning of the movie. And yet he definitely goes and does his maneuvers.
Yes, you.
Yeah, he's a very good pilot. Yes.
Yes, establish that point. DB3, take this over for us.
Well, all right, more or less. Porco Rosso is about a bounty hunter that goes around getting
hunting
money.
Bounties.
Yeah. At the beginning of the movie, there's the pirate, all the people he's brought bounties against bring in a hot shot ace pilot to take him down, and well, I think he would have taken him down, the American at the beginning of the movie, but his plane sort of had some problems, and he more or less,
like I said, it was kind of falling apart at that point. He had to get some repairs done,
and so I don't know, it just goes about through the story. He goes, gets the repairs, and has the show off again against the guy, and
they have their showdown. And I mean, the plot, there isn't a whole bunch of twists and turns to it. I mean, really, it could be broken down into three acts.
Yeah.
The opening act, where it introduces everybody and he goes into a dogfight or two. We notice his plane starting to have trouble. The second act, where he goes and he has the plane fixed up. We learn more about the characters. And then the third act, where he goes and basically has the showdown with the American. The American pilot in this actually shot down Porco. Well, actually, he didn't shoot down Porco. Porco's plane engine more or less stalled and kind of flamed and smoked. And then the guy shot at his plane after the engine had gone out, and Porco crashed on an island and had to be towed to go and get it fixed. And so they have a rematch. You know, they didn't even have a match, but they have a rematch, and more or less, you know, well, can't tell you what happens because, you know, that tells you the end. So basically, it's a three-act movie. But this was really good. Really strong showing from SG.
It was... Mm-hmm. I liked it. It was hilarious. It brought in a lot of humor, like the way he interacted with girls and stuff.
Yes, it was a very funny movie. I have to say it's probably the funniest Ghibli film, SG film, that I've had the pleasure of viewing. The Cat Returns had plenty of humorous moments, but it was an entirely different movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is definitely the funniest out of the three that was released. All had their moments, but this one was packed full of action and laughs, and was more or less the other ones, like Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, that was meant to be a much more serious movie with a more encompassing storyline, though we didn't get to see all of it, of course, because that's in the manga. And The Cat Returns, it was more of a lighthearted thing, more for like
girls,
girls and people, you know, in school and what have you. Whereas Porco Rosso was just more or less a kickback, you know, action comedy adventure movie for just everyone to just enjoy. You know, not just specifically one group, but you know, everybody I think can enjoy this film. And of course, it's got great visuals, even though The Cat Returns is newer, has a very nice computer. Graphical style, you know, computer-assisted animation. This Porco Rosso, I think, actually was my favorite as far as the looks and animation and everything.
I have to agree with you, Andrew. I don't know, it brought me in a lot better than the others. Like,
well, what did you think of this, Ziga? You haven't seen the previous two movies, but what did you think of the animation in this film?
Well, the animation was pretty good. On a few of the frames, I noticed some of the background frames were running into pretty low FPS, frames per second, but general animation was really good. You can tell it's a Miyazaki movie with his classical kind of style in there.
Movies.
And one of the
SDM.
Anyway, one of the things I noticed in Porco Rosso that I really liked is in a moment in Porco Rosso, they're watching an old one of those silent movies. And he got kind of the style of the early American cartoons down pretty well, I think.
Yeah, that was some good stuff.
Their movement was a little bit weird, but he got that down pretty good. He's an awesome animator.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny is I found that pretty funny, the cartoon they had going on in the background there in the movie theater. But what I was going to mention is it was really impressive and a lot of work in that one scene where Porco is cruising past the sheep and all that on that island when he's leaving Italy, and this wasn't any computer-assisted stuff. All those frames had to be drawn by hand, and whereas mainly in the film, you know, most anime, you just have like a long background piece of art that scrolls by in front of the camera with very little animation in it, or maybe a couple of frames of animation where something's happening. Of course, Ghibli's known for their high-quality animation, and all the backgrounds in this were really lively and whatnot. A lot of still frames, too. But that scene where he's flying over the island and we see the surface, that had to take a lot of effort to go and draw all of that, because it's constantly going and not just a single moving picture. That was...
Remember that news item we had a couple... Oh, I don't remember when it was, but they were like... They asked a guy at Pixar if 2D animation is down. They're like, look at Steam Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say look at Porco Rosso.
And that's a couple of years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's really nice. We watched the English dub on this. Very good voice acting.
Mm-hmm.
All the main characters were done by big-name professional actors and actresses. Of course, this is dubbed by Buena Vista under the guidance of Lasseter. Lasseter, of course, works for Pixar, and Pixar worked in conjunction with Disney on this movie to release it under the Buena Vista label. And as such, a lot of, like I said, all of the main characters are voiced by big-name actors, but all of the background characters are voiced by the typical Disney minor character voice actors, such as one of the ones you can really easily tell the voice of. She's been on like a million episodes of The Simpsons. She usually does like the legal voices or, you know, the voices of like the snooty rich women or whatever.
That's what I was thinking, like, voice sounds so familiar.
Yeah, and she just does voices in tons of different Simpsons episodes and Disney cartoons and whatnot. And in this film, she had to play at least three or four different characters. She did the announcer at the fight, the announcer on the boat.
Yeah.
She was a couple of like the one of the old women. She's just, you know, everywhere. And I found her voice really, really annoying. But thankfully, she only had a few lines in this, so it wasn't, you know, too upfront. So, yeah, the dub was a very good job. The character, I forget the name of the actor, Anyways, the person that played Porco, he did a really nice job at both a subdued and over-the-top character.
Yeah.
Good times, you know, Porco is pretty, you know, subdued, laid back. Sometimes he'll find something really funny or outrageous, and then he'll get loud. And I think he did a good job at portraying the character.
I have to agree, like, I don't know. They just picked really good actors for this.
Yeah. And the main female characters were done really well. There was Theo, the young girl that goes and fixes Porco's plane. Yeah. She did a very nice job.
Nice and peppy.
Yes. And then there was, what was the name of the girl at the cafe? Anyways, the girl that works at the bar, she was one of the main female characters in this.
Oh, yeah, Adriana.
Adriana, and she did a really great job of being, a sultry, laid-back Italian woman.
Yeah.
And so all in all, very strong dub, great sound effects as the plane zoom and fly and go here and there. And just all in all, a really great job. Lots of fun, you know, just don't watch this expecting, you know, a deep plot full of revelations and twists. This is straight up adventure. This is the best way you can describe this movie, is an adventure movie. And as that, it succeeds very well, so I'm going to give this one a top recommendation. DB3?
I'd have to agree with you on that top recommendation. It's just, it's my favorite of the three.
What would you say in relation to the earlier ones that we'd seen?
It probably goes this one, then I don't know. The other two about, I'd probably have to go with The Cat Returns then.
No, I'm saying not just the most recently three released, but I'm saying out of all of the
out of all of them?
Films,
oh, wow.
Is this one at the top of the pile? Or?
I don't know. I like Spirited Away and Castle in the Sky a lot. But this is right there with those two. So
kind of like those two are more of the adventurous, you know, story-based ones, and this is more of the the fun action one.
Yeah, this is they're just right there all together. So
you know, the dog fights in this were really great, weren't they?
They were. I like those.
I mean, really well orchestrated. Z-Guy?
I'm going to have to agree with DB3 on this one.
Now, if you agreed with TV3, you'd be like, I'm going to give this one three. Call me! Call me! Ah!
You mean DBC, not DB3. Okay.
I meant DB3.
Okay.
Not a slip at all.
Good deal. I'm going to have to give this one a top recommendation. I haven't seen all the movies that these other two have seen, but I have seen my share of Miyazaki movies. Animation is a very comparable storyline and also
sound effects
and music.
Music was great.
Yeah, music was nice.
So I'm going to give this one a top recommendation. The difference in between this one and other Miyazaki movies that I've seen is this one has a little bit more comedy in it. You got a few really good laughs out of it. I loved it.
Yeah, so there was quite a few hearty laughs to be found within this film. There's at least one line in this movie to make everyone laugh. You know, you might, some people, more jaded people, might go through and be like, you know, but there's got to be at least one line that will make them laugh out loud, because this show is just packed full of moments, you know, and packed full of punches, too, which led to some of those moments. So, from the three of us, this gets a 3 on the top recommendations. Fan mail, 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 fan mail! Well, this week, it was 2 weeks ago that we did an episode.
You know what, that means we've done 3 episodes within the span of 1 week.
Not only have we done 3 episodes within the span of 1 week, which is quite the feat in itself, I've been putting up a new episode every day on the website. And that's been a pain, because I don't like updating the website, because you got to update this and that, you know, and everything, and it's like, for me, it's easier just to mix the episodes together than it is to update the website, even though mixing it together takes longer. It's just more fun, because then I got to think of description for the episode, list the anime, and then I got to go and write down our recommendations for it, you know, so I can eventually update the ratings. I mean, tell you the truth, I haven't updated the ratings since, like, episode 58, you know, and we're on 71. So, really ought to update those ratings, but, you know, whatever. But, so, no fan mail right now, because we just did an episode on Saturday, and so we're just, you know, we're putting an episode out there, and we're going crazy here, but it's all going to build up to September, my friends, when we will be attending NBK. You know, I hope at least one of our fans attends there and goes to our panel.
That'd be nice.
That'd be pretty cool. But, you know, I like making new fans, too, so it's all good. Anyways, since our fan mail section is lacking in the fan mail, I knew we shouldn't have told the people to hold off on their fan mail until they listen to all the backlog episodes. What we're going to do is we're going to make paper mache and let you all see our creations. So, actually, I thought that was pretty funny, that one episode where I had to do the Rubik's Cube. But, no, what we're going to do is we're going to go and make up fake fan mail for Z-Guy, and he's going to go ahead and answer it here on the air, because we need to fill up time. we have no news, man. It could sound like we can 30% of the episode.
We can read the what Everett said about Steam Boy. When are we going to do that?
Well, you want to do that.
It's fun to make fun of.
I don't know. I mean, it is making fun of the director that did Akira. Do you think we'd really feel comfortable doing that?
I would be.
Okay, you got a point. But I'll go and get up that review. Meanwhile, you go and make up a fictitious fan mail for Z-Guy to answer.
All right. Oh, sorry, I couldn't read the screen. It says, ASO fan mail. Subject? Did it again, fan mail. All right. Hey, ASO Radio staff. Z-Guy's back. Holy cow. Maybe I should start listening to the show again. He was my only... His only reason I listened?
Well...
What the heck?
To tell you the truth...
Well, that's how good I am, you know?
That's the only reason I listen. Oh, I'm sorry.
He goes ahead and says, the reason that you were gone... Well, that makes sense. Everyone would want you to save their world and their lives.
Mm-hmm. I gotta agree with him there.
Yeah, yeah. Could really help to make that up.
I mean, tell the truth is what we did.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, in all honesty, if I had to trust the fate of an entire species, let alone an entire world, Z-Guy would be the first person I'd come to.
Yeah, yeah. It says, the person continues and says, so, how close are you with the Fox Princess? I mean... Did you get your groove on?
Are you saying, dear writer, that Z-Guy was on a fox hunt? Z-Guy, how do you respond to this?
Yes, I was on a deep, dark fox hunt.
You know, I'm thinking Z-Guy ain't up to his lingo. Okay, well now we've got a second letter for a Z-Guy here, but before I read that, we've got the review up that Roger Ebert wrote of Steam Boy, which is playing now in selected theaters, which we've mentioned before. Apparently, he gave it 2 stars out of 4, whereas readers of his website have given it 3.5 stars. Boy, if that isn't showing the anime fans. Anyways, okay, so I'm going to read this, and I'm going to have Z-Guy and DB3 make comments as I go along. Okay, Steam Boy by Roger Ebert, March 18th, 2005. Steam Boy, should I read it like him, or should I read it like me?
Actually, I think we should have Z-Guy read it.
He's
look at him, he's ready to fall asleep.
Well, he is, but
okay, you
that's why you just keep hitting him on the knee.
Alright.
Okay. Steam Boy is a noisy, uneventful, and unsuccessful venture into Victorian-era science fiction, animated by a modern Japanese master. It's like H.G. Wells was on crack. Oh, sorry. It's like H.G. Wells and Jules Verne meet Akira.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. He knows what Akira is?
What is Akira?
Maybe we should ask Everett.
Just in all capital letters.
What is Akira?
The story follows 3 generations of a British family involved in a technological breakthrough involving steam, which the movie considers the 19th century equivalent of nuclear power, or possibly Michael Jackson. There may be possibilities here, but they're lost in the extraordinary boredom of a long third act devoted entirely to loud, pointless, and repetitive fart jokes. action. Sorry, action.
Isn't that what the third act is usually, though? Is action?
Well, the third act usually ties everything up, I have to say.
That's if there's... No matter how many acts there are.
The movie opens in 1866 with a collection of water from an ice cave. Its extraordinary purity is necessary for experiments by the Steam family, which is perfecting the storage of power through steam under high pressure.
Steam family, steam power?
What are the odds? Young Ray Steam is the boy hero, whose father Eddie and grandfather Lord Steam are rivals in the development of the technology. One day, Ray gets a package in the mail from his grandfather. Its delivery followed immediately by ominous men dressed in alarming dark Victorian fashions that proclaim, "I am the sinister villain, and I like S&M." The box contains a steam ball, which we learn contains steam under extraordinary power. Oh, pressure. The ball, invented by Lloyd, blame my diet, is either a revolutionary power source and an infernal device that could explode at any moment. Take your choice. Ray decides to try on a peculiar invention that seems to combine the most uncomfortable exercises of riding a unicycle and being trapped in a washing machine and getting jabbed in the eye by nuns, but is captured and taken to the headquarters of the O'Hara Foundation, which wants to control the invention and use it to power new machines of war. It goes without saying, or does it, that the O'Hara family daughter is named Scarlet.
Oh my gosh.
The movie is a result of 10 years of labor by Katsuhiro Otomo, whose Akira, which was done in 1988, was the first example of Japanese anime to break through to world theatrical markets. That one created a futuristic Tokyo, where a military dictatorship cannot control rampaging motorcycle gangs. Apparently, in the future, the military is just incompetent as they are in the present. The animation was state-of-the-art, the vision was bleak, the tone was a radical departure for American audience raised to equate animation with cute animals and fairy tales, and I got my jollies from it, too. Otomo also wrote Rogen Z, about a computerized machine that contains elderly patients within an exoskeleton bed that transports diagnosis, treats, massages, and entertains its occupants. Once installed in the new Z100 model, owners are expected never to leave whether or not they want to. The movie has intriguing ideas about humans' lives ruled by machines, which is why the technology in Steam Boy seems promising. Otomo has reportedly been working on the film for 10 years, drawing countless animation cells by hand and also using computer resources. Why, with all the effort put into the film's construction, did he neglect to go anywhere interesting with the plot? Can I give myself a zing for saying that? What we hope at first, just because Otomo creates Manchester and London at the dawn of the industrial era, when steam power offers limitless possibilities and the internal combustion engine was still impractical. His machines and the interior of the O'Hara Foundation look like the ancestors of pulp science fiction magazine covers, but without the bright colors. For reasons that don't pay off, Otomo's visuals tend towards the pale and drab. Maybe he's going for period atmosphere. I wondered at first if the movie was being projected on video, but no, Otomo wants it to look washed out. Like his career. I mean, really, he's got three things that he's really done.
Yep.
He puts a lot of effort, but, you know. His plot holds promise. The evil O'Hara Foundation wants to hijack the Great Exhibition from which Prince Albert built the Crystal Palace to showcase Britain's leadership of the Industrial Revolution. But the Great Exhibition was held in 1851, and the movie is set in 1866. So I believe the chronology is off. There may have been an explanation that eluded me, this not being a question that riveted my attention at the time. The O'Hara people want to jettison the motion of progress for peace and use the exhibition to promote its expensive new engines of war, hoping every country will buy some, go to war, and then need to buy more. At this point, when the movie could potentially get its teeth into something, Otomo goes nuts with candy and ice cream. Brainless action sequences in which one retrofuturistic device after another does battle, explodes, dives, surfaces, floats, open fire, flies, attacks, defends, and so on. Some of his ideas are promising, including a Zeppelin fitted with a bikini and iron claws that can lift a speeding train car from the tracks. A fearsome strategy indeed, although it would be awkward for the dirigible if the train ever went through a tunnel or under a bridge or raced past big, hard buildings close to the tracks. He doesn't mention the fact that a blimp filled with air would have a difficult time lifting up a several hundred ton train. Just on the fanaticism of the Zeppelin, they don't mention a simple face with black like that. Other ideas are just collisions of hardware punctuated by frantic expostulations. It is a theory of mine that action does not equal interest. Objects endlessly in motion are as repetitive as objects forever at rest. Like me, my wife, and my sack, joy! Context is everything. Why are they moving? Who wants them to move? What is at risk? And what will be gained? By the end of Steam Boy, I was convinced the answers to all of these questions were Otomo has abandoned the story and, in despair, is filling the screen with wonderfully executed but pointless and repetitive kinetic energy. Or as I like to think of it, action doodles, like the pictures I make of my wife and me, oi! No, the movie is showing in theaters in 106-minute English dub version, but some also offer a daily screening of the 126-minute Japanese dub version with English subtitles. Check your local theater. DVD will presumably have both. I hope so. Don't want them to pull off like a Ghost in the Shell 2 movie where they had the Japanese track, but they didn't put the subtitle on there. You know, they had the closed captions subtitle. Boy, that made so many people mad they re-released the DVD.
They said it was an accident that happened.
Yeah, yeah. Later, first, it's supposed to be that way. Then later, oh, it was an accident. We meant it to be there the whole time. Yeah, my eye. But, yeah, it's, obviously that wasn't, the review as Roger Ebert wrote it exactly. I might have indulged a little. apparently, love to Kira. In it so much love, Steam Boy. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Well, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't...
Not your thoughts on the movie versus the review review itself.
But what he says, there's some things that could conceivably be correct, and then there's other things he's like, who are these people? What are they supposed to be doing? I just think that's sort of stupid.
I think Roger Ebert is he's the kind of guy who's seen tons of movies during his life, and his taste has continually gone his own way, which a lot of people follow. But his taste does not have to do with people who watch anime, good anime, you know? And so I don't think he makes a proper view on this. He may think, what an anti-anime person would at times. It kind of depends on your view, but... I don't think he has good taste towards anime, and so he gives some good views.
I don't like much of his reviews, anyways.
I find generally he's pretty spot on, but at times I find he's too lenient, and other times I find that he's too harsh on things. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gave good reviews to Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, and he ripped a new one on Ghost in the Shell 2, which everybody who listens to the show knows my stance on that. Steam Boy, he gave 2 stars, that's not bad, that means it's just, average film.
Yeah.
It sounds like an average film, but I haven't seen it, such as my cohorts here have not, and thus we really can't comment on the quality of the film versus his review, but I think that Ebert is missing the point entirely of this film, just based upon his review and clips that I've seen. Steam Boy isn't about the plot at all.
Yeah.
It's about the action of the film. And I mean, we reviewed Porco Rosso on this show. Now, I'm not saying the two films are the same. I'm definitely not sticking up for Otomo because he's a favorite director of mine. But the simple fact is Porco Rosso is all about the action, the comedy, and the characters. Now, Steam Boy sounds like it doesn't have the comedy and the characters going for it, but it seems obvious to me that the whole point of the film is action, and these action doodles, as Ebert calls it, and since he's not fascinated with those, it's no wonder he gave it such an average review. So what do you guys think on that point?
That's one reason that I don't really like his reviews, because he always has to have a deeper meaning into a movie to really give it a good...
You can't have bubblegum movies, no sort of just popcorn. It's a lot of a lot of volume, but not much mass, eh?
Yeah. Mm. That's how I've always seen the movies. He like rates really high. Like.
Big guy?
No, I haven't seen a lot of Hibbert, but you know, I don't think he's right on all the time. Especially with this movie, he probably did miss the entire pouring. I also have yet to see this movie, Steam Boy. I would like to see it.
If you had to, that would be shocked, I mean.
yeah,
since it's only in... and it's not in this little old hick town, USA, that we live in, but...
true, but we could go to Capital, USA.
Yeah.
And, and see it there in Capital City.
Well, we could do that sometime.
Yeah, I don't know if it's getting pretty much it's getting like a B minus C sort of rating from people. So, you know, it's not only Ebert that feels this way on this film. So, you know, I don't think it'd be worth a 3-hour trip there and a 3-hour trip back in order just to see this film.
All right, well, we'll
especially since you're already falling asleep. But yeah, so of course we'll eventually probably review Steam Boy on the show. We try to get to you know all the big anime here. So yeah, I guess I better read this last letter to Z Guy before we do up this fan mail section. Yeah. Okay,
fan mail / news.
Yeah, the news.
The news.
Or the new mail.
Oh, I like that one too.
Okay, this one is from Julia Roberts. Julia writes, Dear ASO team, happened to get a chance to use that time travel device that you used back on episode 64 and a half, so I could go and listen to episode 70. Oh, very good use of resources. And I have to say, I'm really glad to see that Z-Guy is back. All in all, though, I have to say, Z-Guy, why did you get a different haircut? I liked your old one better. Oh, and give my regards to the Fox Women of Yendor. Okay, well, first of all, the Fox Women weren't from Endor, but I think we'll have to have Z-Guy fill us on exactly why the Fox Princess... Didn't you say in your story the other day, the Fox Princess... she took you to the planet of the Mole people to save them, but how exactly did she get involved and where were her people from?
From what she told me,
she
was from another planet, pretty close to the same solar system, but not quite. And, I think, the Mole people were sending out for help, you know.
Oh, I see.
And so she kind of caught wind and,
Oh, okay. But why was her people unable to help? Was it some sort of long-standing Cold War with the Mole people?
I think so, yeah.
Ah, how convenient that my hypothesis was correct. Okay, but what about the whole haircut thing that Mrs. Roberts mentioned here?
Now, about the haircut.
Funny thing how she listened to the show and decided the haircut, but...
that's what I was thinking.
Maybe she's stalking you.
Ooh, not good.
No wonder she wants to know about the Fox Girl.
It's a conspiracy. One of those dang Hollywood conspiracies.
Hey, man, she's a princess. She's got some tight security.
Yeah.
All right, but on to her question here.
About the hair.
yeah, the hair. She wants to know why you went from the traditional cut to the new forward slopey cut curl thing.
Well... I felt it was time for a change.
So how often do you go through these changes?
Once a month?
Yeah.
Just a change that's for about a week, and then you decide what you want like?
Yeah.
Yeah, it must be like his underwear cycle then. Okay, well... there's still more to the letter here. She writes, okay, as far as the rescue go, though, it would be nice to leave you out of the letter and just address the guy alone, which is why I wrote it in the first place. But I figured I might as well write about some other things that I felt I was thinking but just weren't worth writing in by themselves. First of all, DB3, That episode where you solved the Rubik's Cube, pure genius. But why did it take so much longer than usual?
Well, you see, if you remember, we were talking about other stuff at the time, and, well, my attention was just going through the two.
Yes, that was a very dark episode that we did the Rubik's Cube on there. You know, we were sleep deprived when we did that episode. We're sleep deprived this time, too, and I'm thinking it's a recipe for chaos. Okay, and she goes on to say now, and NZ17, as always, very stylish, very spot on, and I enjoy your jokes. However, lose the beard, it's turning off all the hotties, yo. You know, I don't even think she wrote this part, because it doesn't sound like the rest of her letter. Sincerely, Mrs. Julia Roberts. P.S. Love the show. Hate the fact you can sing better than I can now. Well, yeah, you know, that must suck, because you're a beautiful singer, Julia, and in our hearts you shall sing on forever. Enough whispering. No one can adequately hear. Whisper louder.
I don't think NZ can really sing either.
I sing like an angel. I mean, I've proved it enough on the horrible karaoke's we've done.
How much a few bars?
Bars, 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 bars. Bars.
Hurrah.
Yay.
Sorry, I didn't hum. Okay, well, anyways, that more or less... That wraps up our fan mail section of the show, / reading other people's reviews of anime section. Oh, baby, a hot spot. Okay, so we've finished now doing up the Ghibli, we're done with the reviews, now we can refer to them by name. We finished up reviewing the latest Ghibli trilogy. So the listeners won't have to hear us talk about them for a while now, at least until we review The Castle of Callisto, the loop on the third movie. And so, since we've gone through the past couple of weeks and reviewed all three of these films, I figured it was about time that DB3 and myself do a bit of reflection back on what we've seen, our thoughts, and how the three relate to each other, even though, well, we'll get into that in a moment. But first of all, Z-Guy, you've now seen Porco Rosso, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So now, out of Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind and The Cat Returns, which are you looking forward to more, and what are you anticipating about both?
Well, I haven't seen much in the way of previews on the both of them.
Uh-huh.
But I would love to see Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind more than the other one, just maybe for the name. But it seems like it might be the other way around.
Yes, and well, it's funny you should say that, because Whisper of the Heart, really, seeing that first really does enhance The Cat Returns, which is awkward that Disney didn't release that first. I mean, I'm sure that since that's the newest Ghibli film outside of, what's it called now? Howl's Moving Castle. Which will be released here in America in July,
yay,
if I remember right. Which we will be traveling out to Capital City to watch that one.
There we go.
And regardless of that point, though, I thought that all three of these films were good films, very good. Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind, I think maybe they should have waited until they were further along in the releases before releasing it. I mean, I was really excited for it. I was all pumped out for it. I'm glad they finally brought it out, because, you know, I've been wanting to see this for quite a while, since I didn't really get to read the complete manga. But I was disappointed by the film. I really was. I think that shows through the reviews, but I think I should just, you know, mention it, because I was really expecting a lot more, you know, because Ghibli hardly ever disappoints, and I was disappointed.
Yeah.
What did you think, DB3?
I'd have to... Once again, I get to agree with NZ17.
Aren't you special?
Yeah, I feel pretty special. But he said it pretty, like... you know, something else that might have been a little bit better if they really... Instead of all of them at one time, maybe release them, like, 2 weeks apart. So that way...
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta think, you know, Disney... by releasing three of these films together, they figure, oh, we can do one ad campaign, or we can go and capitalize off each of the films so people will go out and buy all three. But the fact of the matter is, the suggested retail price is $30. And so if you were to buy all three of these films at the same time, including taxes, you're going to spend $100.
Yeah.
So Disney really should have spaced out. So even if they released it over the span of a month or two, the ads would still be fresh in people's minds. And with anime fans, they're very well connected when it comes to the internet. And I'm sure that they would go and pick these up myself. I would have preferred to go and pick them up slowly over time than having to pick them all up at once.
Our fans probably would have preferred that too. I wouldn't always be talking about Studio Ghibli like that.
True, true. Okay, so... Well, what?
Ghibli?
It's funny because we pronounce it Ghibli because that's how it's spelled with the H in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But on the Disney DVDs, they go and they pronounce it Ghibli. So I'm not really too sure how it's pronounced, but I believe it's Ghibli. Yeah, that's my guess. But I can't really say because I've never spoken to Miyazaki personally.
So if anyone knows for sure, go ahead, write us in.
Yeah, we always appreciate having a primer on our Japanese inaccuracies.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I would certainly love to see it Ghibli instead of Ghibli because you might have any relation to Jigglypuff or something like that.
Yeah, Jigglypuff looks like a big pink piggy. with curly, funny colored hair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so The Cat Returns, I really like that. It's really worth seeing. But, you know, I wish they would have done Whisper of the Heart instead of Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, and then the next set released Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind,
yeah.
And The Cat Returns together, you know. And then I think that would have worked out better.
I think they would have made more money.
Yeah, I think so as well. But like you said, spacing it out would have probably made them more, too, because then people could have afforded them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, myself, I waited. I mean, we rented The Cat Returns so we could review that. Then we went about a week or so, and I bought the other two because we weren't able to rent those. I wasn't able to buy all three at once, or I would have. And spacing them out, I think they would have got a lot more sales. I mean, here we are a month later reviewing the third one of it. Although I think that has more to do with our time schedules than anything. Of course, we reviewed Porco Rosso today. And I'm going to say that I really, really like The Cat Returns. And Porco Rosso, of course, is fresher on my mind since we just watched it. But as far as an anime with which to go and introduce people to the world of anime with, I would say that Porco Rosso would be the superior of the two choices. Because, really, it's able to engage everybody, I think.
Yeah.
You know, whereas The Cat Returns, like I said...
I did think of one problem with Porco Rosso.
Yeah?
It never says why he was turned into a pig.
Yes, they did.
You just said he was cursed.
Yes.
Yeah. How did he get the curse? What happened?
Okay. Let me break it down real quick. What happened is basically is he acted like a pig, and so he became like a pig. And so once he stopped acting like a pig, then he could break the curse.
Okay.
But it doesn't spell that out in big, bold letters. Yes, it's a little more subtle, apparently. So,
Well, now don't act so sheepish.
Yes, well. but, yeah, I think Porco Rosso, what do you guys think? Would that be the best
to
introduce him with? What do you think, you guys, just based upon your cursory knowledge?
I think so, yeah.
But, they're all worth watching. They really are. You know, so, of these three, in my order, starting with my favorite, it's really hard to put it between The Cat Returns and Porco Rosso. So, for now, I'm just going to say, tentatively, mind you, this isn't, my final word on this, but I'm going to say Cat Returns, because I think it was a little more deeper, both were primary action, but I like The Cat Returns just a little bit more than Porco Rosso, than Nausicaa of the Valley.
Do you think you like The Cat Returns that much more because you've seen Whisper of the Heart?
Seeing Whisper of the Heart went and it added more dimensions to the film.
So people without having seen that, which do you think they would like more?
Without seeing Whisper of the Heart, I'm still going to go with Porco Rosso. Either seeing Whisper of the Heart or not seeing Whisper of the Heart, Porco Rosso, I think, is just overall the better film and stands better on its own. The Cat Returns doesn't use the movie that came before it as a crutch, using Whisper of the Heart as a crutch at all.
So why do you therefore go and put The Cat Returns before?
It's just a personal choice on that one. But really, you get more out of The Cat Returns by seeing Whisper of the Heart, but you're not missing out on anything overly significant otherwise. The only thing that you'd be getting by watching Whisper of the Heart first is the references that the author, which of course is the girl in the Whisper of the Heart, is you just get the references that she's making to people that she knows in real life and events that she's been through. And so really, the film stands on its own. You don't need to see that before, but it does enhance the viewing experience as a whole. What are your thoughts, DB3, on the Ghibli films?
I thought I gave those when we were reviewing Porco Rosso.
Well, no, I meant collectively, as the three released together.
Well, I don't know what much more to say than what I haven't already said.
Okay, well, let's change it then, since I basically said what I thought, and you more or less apparently said your piece. What did you think of this three as compared to the release of Spirited Away, Castle in the Sky, and Kiki's Delivery Service, since those three were the previous three that were released simultaneously?
Well, that's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like the previous set a little bit more overall in comparison. I don't know, those first three were the three to bring out first, because it catch people's eye, and they're just more, I think they're a little bit more enthralling. They have the humor, they have the stuff.
Yeah, they're a different set, that's for certain. Kiki, well, in my opinion, Kiki is much more endearing. The characters, all of the characters in Ghibli films are usually great.
Yeah.
But in Kiki's, there's something really endearing about the characters in that show. You know, they really, you know, you don't forget them easily. It's like you know them in real life, and you'd like to hang around with them, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see, Castle in the Sky, that had a lot more ambitious plot than either of these, even though that was primarily action-based like this one. And Spirited Away, I think, was fantastic, because while Porco Rosso is approachable by all walks of people, Spirited Away engages all sorts of people on different levels. So if you're an adult, you'll enjoy it for these reasons. If you're a kid, you'll enjoy it for other reasons. And so as you grow, you find out more things in the movie. Like, if you were to watch it, like Miyazaki said, this is a film for 10-year-old girls, but you watched it and you were 10, you'd get certain things, and then as you watched it later on in the years, you would catch more things and more things further and further on. And so that was more engaging than Porco Rosso, but Porco Rosso is more accessible, I think, because Spirited Away has a lot of Asian references to culture and what have you, whereas Porco Rosso has a much more Western feel to the whole thing. European.
We're comparing them in the threesome together. So
right.
You can't compare just to Porco Rosso.
Well, so you think the previous set was stronger than this?
Yeah, I think overall they were stronger.
I'm going to have to agree with you there. Castle in the Sky, Kiki's Delivery Service, and Spirited Away formed a stronger trio than Porco Rosso, The Cat Returns, and Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. It's almost the reverse of the first set.
Yeah.
Because while the first one had Castle in the Sky as the action-filled adventure movie, this set has The Cat Returns and Porco Rosso as the action-filled ones. And so where the first was like two serious plot-driven ones, this one was one serious plot-driven one, you know? And the serious plot-driven one wasn't as strong as the two earlier serious plot-driven ones. And so I think that has to do with the first set being stronger.
But that's not taken away from the second set. It has its great strengths too, so.
True. But when it comes to a serious film, a comedy and action film, you know, they don't have to be super good to be enjoyable for you to like them. But a serious film needs to be very well constructed in order to stand up. And that's where I think Spirited Away and Castle in the Sky succeeded better than Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. I feel of the two, though, Castle in the Sky was about on the same level as Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. So if you enjoyed Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, you'll enjoy Castle in the Sky and vice versa. Okay, well, I think it's time we wrap this up. A little bit shorter than usual. This is, you know, probably less than an hour long. News, so that made things a little shorter.
Yeah.
I do have a question, kind of, maybe to put a bigger view on some of the fans. I've watched Castle in the Sky,
mm-hmm.
and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I do agree it wasn't the best of the Miyazaki movies, but... So, do you think that I would actually like Nausicaä Valley of the Winds?
Yeah. I'm going to leave this one to DB3. I think he's got a better perspective on this than I probably do. What do you think the two are in relation? Do you think Nausicaä might be a little better, a little worse?
I think Castle in the Sky is a little bit better,
mm-hmm.
but I would definitely suggest going out and watching Nausicaä the Valley of the Winds.
If nothing else, not the anime, the movie, it gets you interested enough to go and read the manga, find out what you're not seeing.
And, like, I found that Castle in the Sky a little bit more humorous, and Nausicaä a little bit more thinkable, like you had to think a little bit more about it. So you can't directly compare them like that, but they are comparable, and I think you would enjoy them both.
Yeah, it's funny, to change the subject here, you can see Ghibli's influence on so many things. You know, it's like they've helped sculpt modern Japan's culture. You know, I mean, okay, last time we talked about how Nausicaä the Valley of the Wind was more or less a direct influence for the first Final Fantasy and the subsequent Final Fantasies as well. Of course, you can see the influence of My Neighbor Totoro and all sorts of sly references here and there.
Yeah.
But if you look at Castle in the Sky, there you go right there. That almost seems as a direct influence for Game Arts' games of Lunar, the Silver Star Story Complete, and Lunar 2 Eternal Blue especially. And it just seems that Ghibli just goes about, makes these monumental films. Everybody goes to see them. It's on everybody's mindset, so whether on purpose or not, it ends up working itself into the culture and the works produced by the culture of Japan.
That's true. And, you know, another reason that you might like Nausicaä Valley of the Wind is just because of how it helped with Final Fantasy. You'd be like, oh, wow.
We'll see about that.
Check out this tenuous connection. Think of it this way, Z-Guy. If Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind wasn't animated and put into a movie, which was seen by Hironobu Sakaguchi, who then went on to create Final Fantasy, then Square wouldn't have become the multi-million-dollar video game publisher that it became, and thus Xenogears would have never been developed by the people that had been influenced by going and seeing Neon Genesis Evangelion, which in turn was thus influenced and brought about by Studio Gainax because of the popularity of anime fueled by Studio Ghibli.
That's all incredibly complex. I do think
Takahashi
would have figured out how
wonderful
to come up with Xenogears another way, but...
Are you saying that Xenogears and its sequel would have existed without Neon Genesis Evangelion? I mean, the references are very heavy-handed.
Okay, fine!
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure Takahata, you know, he's a great author and everything, but I think that what became Xenogears would have been nothing like what it was, even if it would have still had the same strong storyline. You know.
I think you got you.
Oh, okay. I still say I'm going to have to see how these play out between Nausicaä Valley of the Wind and Final Fantasy anyway. We'll see. Well, I'll have to make a little short review of it later.
Well, I've got to say about that is,
whey!
And so I'll leave that up to your imagination to how that ties together. But
All right.
I'm sure those that have seen Nausicaä the Valley of the Wind know what I'm talking about. All right, well, here's looking forward to the next trilogy of Ghibli films. Hopefully they'll be strong as the last couple of sets have been, you know. First, we only got a small trickle of them out here in America, and now it's nice to see them released. But what I'd rather have, since DB3 mentioned this earlier, instead of going and having Buena Vista release three every year or two, I'd like to see them go and release them, like, once every, like, 4 months. You know, that would be a nice, much more easier to manage schedule. Yeah. You wouldn't overload everybody all at once, you know.
I'd agree with that.
Okay, well,
and it wouldn't hurt my pocketbook as much.
Yeah, there you go. So for this SG-licious episode of ASO Radio, this is NV17.
Z-Guy.
And DB3.
Signing on out.